On the campus of the University of Wisconsin in Madison sits a building from a different era. High up on a hill, tucked away in a remote part of campus and overlooking Lake Mendota, you will find a small brick edifice with an obnoxiously large black dome atop it. This is the Washburn Observatory, a place full of astronomy history. And first off, it's best to go at night. Walk inside, ascend the strangely angled staircase, open a creaky door, and you enter into a pitch black cavern of a room with a ceiling of undetermined height. It's so dark in there, but as your eyes adjust, you see standing upright, mounted on a metal pier, a baby blue painted telescope about 20 feet long. There's no mistaking, that's a telescope. And the astronomer at Washburn, Jim Lattice, well, he turns to me and he said, well, I'll look through it. From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm your host, Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up. The show that takes you deep into the cosmos or just to the telescope in your backyard to learn more about what makes this amazing universe of ours so great. My guest today is one of the all-time experts in antique telescopes and the curator of the most unique telescope museum called the Astronomical Lyceum in New Mexico, and I'm talking about John Briggs. All right, we're here at the Washburn Observatory, Madison, Wisconsin, and we're looking at the telescope here, the old refractor, and so I'm here with Jim Lattice.
Director of UW Space Place is the best title to use.
There we go, and knows everything about the telescope.
Yeah, the Washburn Observatory at the University of Wisconsin, this is a really cool place. It was completed in 1881, and so most of the equipment in that room is more than 100 years old.
So it's a 15.6-inch Clark refractor that was made in 1878 and became operational right here in January of 1879.
And it still works. I mean, they use this for teaching. They use it for the public. You could put your eye up to that telescope.
It was modified a lot, though, over the years when it was actively used in research. It was used for photoelectric photometry here for decades. This is really where astronomical photoelectric photometry was developed.
And so for the past 4 years, I've been touring and visiting historic observatories around the country. And each historic observatory has its own little story. Each contributed to discoveries in the late 19th century and early 20th century. So my favorites are the Detroit Observatory in Ann Arbor. This is at the University of Michigan. So it's right on campus on this little hillside. They have an old telescope, but then they also have this other building that's called a transit room or meridian telescope, where the roof opens from north to south and you can measure the stars. In Pittsburgh, they have their own observatory as well, called the Allegheny Observatory. This dates back to 1861, one of the oldest in the country. Now, I'm going to be telling you about the Allegheny Observatory a little bit more. There's some drama. We'll get to that. But there are some other places around the country, too, like Des Moines has the Drake Municipal Observatory. Denver has the Chamberlain Observatory. There's a Lowell Observatory in Flagstaff, Arizona. Yerkes Observatory in Williams Bay, Wisconsin. Cincinnati Observatory, which is the oldest telescope in the whole country. So if you're really into like cool, functional, steampunky things, well, antique American telescopes are for you. And there are probably more of these antique observatories around the country than you might think. In fact, there's probably one pretty close to where you live, and you should visit them, because all the ones I know about are open to the public and will let you look through the telescope.
I'm John Briggs, speaking for Magdalena, New Mexico, and I run an informal astronomy museum out here that we call the Astronomical Lyceum.
So what is it for you that makes antique telescopes so unbearably cool?
Oh boy, they're functional works of art, in my opinion. The craftsmanship in these beautiful older instruments It's inspirational. Often the makers signed them, engraved into the brass, the name of the maker and the date, in the same way a painter would sign a painting. But the fact that you can use these things, like time machines, because let's say you're looking through a telescope, a fairly big telescope that might have been made back in the 1860s, but yet after all these decades, over 100 years, this thing is still working to show you a beautiful, crisp view of Saturn and its rings, or Jupiter. The fact that these old telescopes work as well as they do, and they're just cool, it's easy to get wrapped up in how interesting they are.
Well, you've seen quite a few designs over the years. Are there some special, like, telescope manufacturers, some, really unique engineering ones that kind of stand out to you?
Well, yeah. Among American enthusiasts for telescopes, we tend to celebrate the American makers, like Alvin Clark and Sons, that became active in the mid-1850s in Massachusetts. And there was another wonderful early maker named John Brashear, who started making telescopes in, I think, in the 1870s in the Pittsburgh area. And of course, there were European telescope makers, excellent, even earlier. And I'm talking mainly about lens-type telescopes, because fundamentally a telescope might use either lenses or mirrors to gather the light and focus the light. Modern telescopes more often use mirrors. The older telescopes often used big lenses, and often antique telescope enthusiasts focus on lens type or refracting telescopes.
And so fast forward quite a bit in the future, your love of antique telescopes took a particular turn when you started your own museum called the Astronomical Lyceum in New Mexico. Tell us about this museum, or do you even want to call it a museum?
Well, yeah, it's very informal. I live in very rural New Mexico. I was able to purchase for a very reasonable price an old abandoned school gymnasium building, a gymnasium theater building in Magdalena, New Mexico. And it was built by the WPA in 1936. And I got this as a space to work on instruments that I had collected over the years. But when I told my many telescope friends, when I bragged to them, boy, I've got this space now, I can unpack all the stuff I've had in storage for a lifetime and begin working on it, I'm very lucky to have the space. Some of my friends, after my bragging, they retaliated a bit. They said, okay, Briggs, if you have so much space, that's great. I'm going to give you all of my stuff. And I accumulated things. A lot of things actually given to me by fellow enthusiasts, so that my building is almost overflowing now. But they are wonderful artifacts, some of them very historical, and I could go on and on describing the details. But that is how what I call the Astronomical Lyceum started.
All right, this is going to be an almost impossible question to answer, but maybe it won't. What is your favorite antique telescope in the United States?
Oh, my goodness. Of course, that is very hard, because each of them is potentially so interesting. Maybe I could answer it this way. In terms of one that was particularly inspirational to me as a young person, there is a refracting telescope at Seagrave Memorial Observatory in North Scituate, Rhode Island. And it's an Alvin Clark lens-type telescope made in 1878. In the 1930s, after its original owner, Frank Seagrave, passed away, fortunately, this little observatory became the property of a Rhode Island astronomy club that's been running ever since. And the organization is called Skyscrapers Incorporated. And it's, in many ways, it's a lot like the Cincinnati Astronomical Society. In fact, Cincinnati Astronomical Society owns a nearly twin 8-inch Clark refractor. In any case, the one in Rhode Island is one I got to use a lot when I was a teenager and young man, and I have particularly nostalgic feelings about that one. But I'm afraid it's only one of many that were inspirational to me, because they've all been so exciting, and they all bring neat memories of experiences and things I've seen through them.
Absolutely. And so how can people find you at the Astronomical Lyceum? And do you need an unpaid assistant to go through some of the equipment?
Yeah, I'm afraid I do. But if you came out and saw how much stuff I've amassed, I'm afraid, for all your enthusiasm, you might go running away in terror, because there's certain informality to this facility that we sometimes call a museum out here. But when people visit, they can tell that the interest in the subject is very earnest. And so, yeah, you come on out and I'll show you around, and maybe you'll hang out a while, maybe you'll run away. But I am pretty easy to find. If you Google the Astronomical Lyceum, you will find contact information and my name, John Briggs, and I welcome contact from anyone interested. And folks can also become involved with the Antique Telescope Society.
Well, this has been a lot of fun talking with you, John, today. Thinking back to my times with the antique telescopes, it's always a pleasure talking to a fellow aficionado.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you for your interest and the time we've shared.
And trust me, I'm coming out to visit. I just got to get out there to Magdalena.
Good. We'll look forward to it. Take care.
So I mentioned the Allegheny Observatory in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And if you're going to have a giant historic telescope open to the public in some dark, you know, out of the way places, and you're there for long enough, you're going to have drama. And the drama struck on July 8th, 1872. That's when the director of the Allegheny Observatory, Samuel Pierpont Langley, returned to work to find the lens was missing from his giant telescope. Oh my God, I can't even, I'm having a heart attack even thinking, imagining that. What's more, the thief was bold enough to leave a ransom note. The note said, "Meet in the woods behind the observatory, or you will never see your precious lens again." Well, Langley ended up meeting with the perpetrator, who, by the way, did not bring the lens with him to the meeting, and utterly refused to pay the ransom. Langley was like, "Sorry, dude, we're not getting that lens. We're not paying you anything." Man, these astronomers were kind of tough back then, I guess. So a newspaper reporter at the time, he was tracking down some leads and trying to help find who stole the lens. And it seems pretty likely that this reporter found out the identity of the thief and threatened him well enough that the thief left town. But before he left town, he also left the lens behind. And the valuable lens was eventually discovered in a hotel trash can. I mean, you can't write this stuff. I mean, this is unbelievable. So Langley recovers the lens, but it is scratched and badly damaged. So the lens actually had to be refigured. And I don't know if it turned out to be a good thing, but when they refigured the lens, it actually made it better. And so it was significantly improved from its original design. So the same lens is back in the same tube, and you can actually look through the stolen lens. The identity of the thief remains a mystery to this day, but the moral of the story is obvious, don't you think? Don't mess with old-timey astronomers. Looking Up with Dean Regas is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds and I created the podcast in 2017. Ella Rowan and Marshall Verbsky produce and edit our show and track down anyone who steals my lunch from the Looking Up fridge. Janelle Walton is our vice president of content, and Ronnie Salerno is our digital platforms manager. Our social media coordinator is Hannah McFarlane. Our theme song is Possible Light by Ziv Moran, and our cover art is by Nicole Tiffany. I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.